Hey, what's going on? I'm Kevin Woodman, and welcome to my new podcast, Philadelphia Eagles Talk. This is episode 10, and I don't even know where to lead this podcast off with. There's so many things going on right now in Philadelphia Eagles, you know, the headlines, the news stories. The Eagles are always a team of that garner a lot of attention, even in the postseason. We're not even in the offseason yet, but there's so many big stories, so many big offseason stories for the Eagles right now that I don't even know where to begin. And I think that, you know, number one, I mean, I think the two biggest stories are definitely tied at the hip, and that's the Eagles' search for a new head coach, which there's rumors coming out that the Eagles have basically, presented to these head coaching candidates that they've interviewed. They've interviewed a ton of head coaching candidates, by the way, which I'll go over some of the interviews and some of the developments on the coaches. But it sounds like the Eagles are basically presenting to these head coaches that, look, we want you to try to fix Carson Wentz. We don't want to move on from Carson Wentz, which is definitely, you know, it's a little bit surprising. There was so much thought going into the offseason that Carson Wentz would be something that the Eagles would desperately try to get out from underneath his contract. And this new, you know, report that comes out that basically paints Carson Wentz as maybe the largest issue of the Philadelphia Eagles this past season really supports that, really supports the idea that maybe the Eagles should move on, that maybe the Eagles, you know, this is something that they can't fix or that Carson Wentz can't fix here. Because if you read the report, and this is, there's some seriously explosive allegations, which it's hard to call it explosive because this is the second time that a report like this has come out in the last 3 years, I want to say. I don't remember when the original story came out. I want to say it came out after the 2018 season, where it was essentially the same story. This is just a little bit more in detail. And when you look back throughout the last couple years of the Eagles, there's been a lot of anonymous sources coming out saying that Carson Wentz is playing favoritism with the receivers. And there's so many different stories that have come out, which is not something that the Eagles are necessarily used to. If you go back to before the Eagles won the Super Bowl, I don't remember this many big stories coming out about them. I don't know if it goes hand in hand. Once you win a Super Bowl, the league pays more attention, or, you know, news outlets pay more attention or whatever. I don't know if that's something that came with their success, but you can't deny that within the last couple of years, since 2017, there's just been leak after leak after leak after leak, big story after big story after big story, and a lot of them have been pointing the finger right at Carson Wentz. And a lot of us have really, you know, especially in the media, has looked at that like, well, you know, it's a big story. You know what I mean? Every time that somebody would bring up Carson Wentz versus Nick Foles post 2017, it's a big story. It gets clicks, it gets views. And a lot of times that people have talked about, you know, Carson Wentz versus Dak Prescott. This is an ongoing story, an ongoing development that constantly gets a lot of talk, you know, talk from national, you know, media personalities and stuff like that. You hear about it, you know, probably once a week during the season, you have a story, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz. It's always going on and on and on. And it's something that always feeds the news cycle. And this latest one, it feels a lot like much of the same. So I don't even feel the need. I mean, I've talked about this. I was talking about this a few podcasts ago where I was bringing up that original story from 2 years ago from 2018 where I was saying that, you know, there was a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And Carson Wentz came out. He owned all of it. So for people that are saying, you know, where are the sources? Where are the sources of this? A lot of people want to, you know, stick their head in the sand and act like without a source, without a name to who's saying these things, that it's not necessarily true. And that's total BS, because Carson Wentz was the source. When the original story came out in 2018, that he wasn't being a good teammate, that he was bullying coaches and he was hard to coach and he was doing his own thing, and he basically wouldn't listen to anybody, which is kind of the gist of the news story. He owned it all, and he came out and he had an interview and he said, I could have been a better teammate and I could have did this better and all this stuff. But obviously that was just lip service. That was just PR, because it seemed like he was right back at it. And he basically was worse the second time around, because it seems like he was sabotaging Doug. He was sabotaging Doug's offense. And he was sabotaging the Eagles, the entire team, really. But it seems like he was sabotaging Doug when they go into specifics with him changing plays, which is something that I brought up in a podcast previously, too. I questioned when, you know, the offense started to work behind Jalen Hurts. A lot of people were pointing, you know, that obviously they just needed a new quarterback. But when the offense started working and the offense started being run the way a lot of people wanted it to be run when Carson Wentz was playing, things like moving the pocket, things like running the football, these are all things that people were saying, well, obviously Doug changed the play calling. He's calling the game differently now. And they were almost trying to make it seem like Doug was trying to sabotage Wentz, where now this report comes out. It says in the opposite direction that maybe Wentz was changing the plays. Wentz was you know, doing a lot of kills at the line and basically making changes that didn't make sense, that didn't help the team, which is something that, you know, that basically says that if Doug was calling plays to Wentz's strengths, that Wentz was killing it and running the stuff that he wants to run, which once again goes back to the 2018 report where Carson Wentz essentially was quoted as saying he didn't want to run Nick Foles stuff, which, you know, Nick Foles stuff is a lot of RPOs and a lot of the stuff that you saw from Jalen Hurts. You know, when they were running with Jalen Hurts, there was a lot of those, you know, Wentz, it almost sounds like he wants to run more pro style stuff like he did in college, where, you know, Jalen Hurts, a lot of the college stuff has really taken over the NFL. A lot of the, you know, the jet sweeps and the bubble screens and stuff like that, you know, things that a lot of teams are doing, a lot of, you know, motions behind the line and stuff like that to really, you know, I was watching the Kansas City Chiefs game and the Buffalo Bills game this last weekend, and they were doing a lot of stuff like that, a lot of really creative stuff. And we always kind of wondered, where did that creativity go from the 2017 Eagles? A lot of people were saying that it went to Indianapolis with Frank Reich, but we saw some of that creativity back in the short time that we saw Jalen Hurts take the field for the Eagles. So, like I said, all these things, when we wonder why Doug was calling games a certain way for Foles compared to a certain way for Hurts, where I never really believed that. It's looking more and more now like he was intending to call the same game, but Wentz wasn't letting it happen, and Hurts was letting it happen. Hurts is a rookie. He's not going to go to the line and change calls and stuff like that. Wentz obviously feels more entitled based off of his position on the team, based off of his contract, based off of his draft status. All that stuff is obviously built up in Wentz's head, making him think that he can do these things when he really shouldn't be allowed to. And that brings us to the coaching search, which obviously isn't going too well because the Eagles don't have a coach yet. I didn't even want to record this podcast because last week I recorded a podcast and then a bunch of hirings happened, you know, a lot of which were players or were coaches that the Eagles actually interviewed. So I wanted to wait because it feels like there might be a head coach signing on the coming up very soon. A lot of people are saying that there's a lot of signs pointing that Josh McDaniels, which if you guys remember, he has been that name Josh McDaniels has been surrounded by more controversy than anything when it comes to being a head coach. As far as a coordinator goes, I mean, he's had nothing but success, but you could easily point to that being Tom Brady or Bill Belichick or, you know, whoever in New England. But to give you guys a little bit of background, if you don't know a lot about Josh McDaniels, there's a very checkered past. I'm not a huge fan of it. I have feelings both ways about it. Number one, if you look at it, this will be the second time that Josh McDaniels will get a head coaching job if the Eagles hire him. The first time did not go very well at all. The first time was actually pretty disastrous. When he went to Denver, this was, you know, back when Jay Cutler and they also had Brandon Marshall. They had actually had one of the top offenses in the league when Josh McDaniels took over. But they also had a very headstrong, you know, a very, you know, Jay Cutler, he's known historically for having a bad attitude. And it seems like Josh McDaniels wanted to shake that up. So once he got there, Jay Cutler got traded. He also, Brandon Marshall was another guy with, I don't know if I can say it was a bad attitude, but he definitely had very checkered past and a lot of red flags. So they traded Brandon Marshall. They traded Jay Cutler. I don't remember if they got a great amount of you know, resources back. I think they might have got a first round pick for Jay Cutler because they had two first round picks the following year. And the way that they replaced Jay Cutler was they drafted Tim Tebow in the first round, which obviously was a great move. I mean, that guy, you know, he went on to become one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history. Sarcasm. Tim Tebow, I mean, you go from, you know, if you look at that just at face value, the things that stand out the most about Jay Cutler, horrible attitude, rocket arm, all the talent in the world. Okay. That sounds a lot like Carson Wentz, doesn't it? Horrible attitude right now, amazing talent. Did he fix, if the Eagles really want to bring in a guy to fix a guy like Carson Wentz, how did that work out in Denver with Jay Cutler? They shipped him out. They couldn't handle it. They shipped him out of town, even though he had all the talent in the world. He went to Chicago, and he did go to an NFC Championship game, even though he didn't finish that game either way. But ultimately, he still had a pretty successful career, a much more successful career than Tim Tebow. So, you know, Josh McDaniels, I'm guessing that, you know, he when he came to Denver, he had more power than he probably should have had, because he drafts Tim Tebow to replace, one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league. Tim Tebow has a great attitude, but he has a noodle arm. This is a guy that he doesn't have the type of NFL arm that you want, and he definitely shouldn't have been a first round pick. So I don't know if Howie Roseman looks at Josh McDaniels' horrible draft history and says, I like that guy because that's the type of drafting he likes to do. But ultimately, I don't understand why you're going to basically look at his time as a head coach before and how that parallels what you want to get out of him now. So he couldn't handle Jay Cutler as a talent, but they think that he could handle Carson Wentz as a talent with the same, you know, I think Jay Cutler might have had a worse attitude than Carson Wentz, but it's a very similar situation. And then he also, after trading Brandon Marshall, who I think is probably I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but he could be. He brought in Demaryius Thomas in that same draft, who for the first couple of years looked like a mistake as well, but ultimately he turned his career around and had a pretty good career. But still, he shipped out two of the more talented players and brought in much less in replacements. And then, you know, within the second season, he was already fired. The first year, he didn't have a great offense his first year in Denver either. I think he had like the 15th rated offense, but obviously he traded away a lot of talent. They went from like the number one or two rated offense to, you know, a mediocre offense, which is understandable because of those trades. But he also had Kyle Orton as a starting quarterback, which was one of the bigger issues. Even though he drafted Tim Tebow, he didn't take over a starter until after Josh McDaniels left. But yeah, like I said, so, you know, that wasn't a great stint in Denver. Like I said, fired. He only had 3 wins the second season when he got fired in week 13. In Denver, and then he went back to New England. Had a lot of success in New England, obviously, but is that because of him? I mean, he had Tom Brady pretty much every year he was in New England, and he had Bill Belichick, who obviously is the greatest coach in NFL history, you know, by a lot of people's accounts. So, you know, how much success can you point at Josh McDaniels and say that that's really why, there's none? Because if you look at this year, they bring in Cam Newton, who is another guy who you could say was in need of fixing. I mean, his last year in Carolina, obviously this guy has a lot of physical talent, but that's really deteriorated. It's to the point where Cam Newton, people were questioning if, you know, Cam Newton doesn't have the ability with his legs anymore. Can he still be an effective quarterback? You bring him into New England, and what did he do to make Cam Newton look good? He did nothing. Cam Newton had the worst year of his career, and I know that there was a lot of issues there. I mean, you couldn't teach that guy enough of your offense in the short amount of time that you had, but I think that speaks, you know, volumes to Josh McDaniels. If you look at his success with Tom Brady and think that that means anything, how does that mean anything? It's Tom Brady. Look what he's doing right now. He's still playing. He just went to Tampa Bay for a season, and he's still playing. He's in the championship game. So, obviously, to me, Josh McDaniels, he's not the beginning of anybody's success. I mean, you can't point to anybody and say that was because Josh McDaniels had a hold of him. In reality, Tom Brady is successful because Tom Brady is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, maybe the greatest quarterback of all time. And, you know, he hasn't had success anywhere else he went. And when he went to Denver, too, there was a lot of reports that he was really butting a lot of heads, which I think back then he probably wasn't mature enough. I don't know if that's changed now, but I don't think bringing in a coach who lacks maturity is a good look. I mean, we've all seen the clips of him and Tom Brady yelling at each other on the sideline and stuff like that. I don't know if that's something that when you have a guy that's being coddled like Carson Wentz to go from 0 to 100, a guy's going to be yelling at you and getting in your face. He already is basically saying he wants out. You really think that if you bring him in to try to fix Wentz and then he's yelling at him on the sideline that he's not just going to want out even more? I mean, that sounds like a tricky situation. Maybe they're still going to trade Carson Wentz. We really don't have have an answer as far as that's concerned. But when you look at the article that was written about Carson Wentz just recently that came out, one of the things that really stood out to me is that Wentz doesn't like to be coached hard. He never takes accountability for anything that he does. He's too buddy-buddy with Press Taylor, the quarterback's coach. All these things have been things that have been questioned for a long time. So if you bring in Josh McDaniels, which, you know, like I said, it's not guaranteed yet, but all the rumors are suggesting that it's on the horizon. You know, maybe he can get in Wentz's face and coach him hard and all that stuff, but maybe Wentz won't like it. Maybe Wentz won't take to it. Maybe Wentz will still want to leave, which is definitely a tenuous situation. But this isn't the NBA where players can just call their shots. I mean, I guess Wentz can just sit on the bench and be happy. I guess he could say, you know what, I'm not going to play. And, you know, you could just put me on the bench making all this money. I don't really know what his out is. If the Eagles want to keep him, he's under contract for several seasons. I don't know, really know what he can really do about that. Because, you know, in the NBA, players run the league, and you've only seen cases like that in the NFL a few times. Antonio Brown forced his way out of a couple of situations, which obviously almost cost him his career, but he ended up where he ended up, and he's doing pretty good in Tampa Bay right now as they're on the brink of a possible Super Bowl. So he did win that. But that's the only time I can remember where a player really dictated where he was going to go and where he was going to play and all that stuff. And Deshaun Watson's going to try to do that now in Houston. But I don't know if Wentz has the juice to do that because he hasn't played well. Antonio Brown caught 100 balls in his sleep every year. And Deshaun Watson is probably, you know, one of the top five quarterbacks in the league right now, where Carson Wentz just came off probably the worst season of, one of the worst seasons of his career, definitely the worst season of his career, but one of the worst seasons in the entire league as far as anybody's concerned. I mean, he was just atrocious. So I don't see how anybody's going to really play ball with him to try to bring him in. There's a lot of issues there that have to be resolved going forward in the offseason. The Eagles do have one final interview today. I mean, I don't know if it's the final interview, but there is one more interview left on their docket, and that is they are interviewing Brian Bowles, the defensive coordinator from the Arizona Cardinals, who was actually the secondary coach for the Eagles a few years ago. They brought him in. I think he might have actually took over for Juan Castillo for a short time when they let Juan Castillo go midseason, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But I do know that this is a guy that's been a head coaching candidate for a long time. I think they do have an interview requested for Eric Bieniemy, which is like an Eagles favorite. Although, you know, all these guys, there's a lot of good candidates that are still left. Every team is pretty much scooped up a head coach except for the Eagles and the Texans, which those are two of the biggest disasters in the league right now. The Texans, Deshaun Watson won't even return their phone calls right now in Houston. So that's probably going to be the last team. I would like to think the Eagles will be the next team to get a coach. And I did hear that Brian Daboll, which was another candidate I'm not sure if the Eagles were interested in him or not, but a source came out saying that Brian Daboll says he's not interested in Philadelphia, which is, you know, that's the type of stuff you don't want to hear when it comes to your organization. When people are publicly coming out and saying, I'm not interested in going there, that's not a good look. I mean, it's one thing if they don't take the job, but when it comes out publicly, like, nah, I'm not coming over there, that's not making your team look very good. And maybe that's why the Eagles have to roll the dice on a guy like Josh McDaniels, who you can, you know, for whatever you think about Josh McDaniels, he was a hot head coaching candidate a couple years ago, twice. He was a hot name on the circuit twice, when he got the Denver job and when he got, the Indianapolis job, which obviously he spurned them. And he came there, he hired all their coaches, and then he went back to New England, which is pretty unheard of. So I think a lot of teams wanted to stay away from him based off of that. I mean, maybe they think his loyalty to New England just couldn't be broken, or maybe they think that he would just screw them over the same way that he screwed over the Colts. It's really hard to say, but if he is interested in coming to Philadelphia, you can look at it from two different perspectives. You can look at it from, why would you want this guy? He might screw us over the same way. Or you can look at it like, you're getting this guy at a discount. You're getting this guy at a bargain price based off of the fact that he was a hot coaching candidate. It's not like he suddenly forgot how to coach, or he's not as good as he once was. You're getting him at a bargain because his reputation's been hurt. So that might actually work out. We might actually be able to get a guy that nobody was really talking about, by the way. I mean, like I said, he was a big name every offseason the last couple of seasons. But since the Indianapolis disaster, nobody's talked about him at all. Now, we just might be able to sneak him in the back door and get him at a bargain price based off of the fact that nobody's really talking about him based off of that stunt that he pulled, which might work out for the Eagles. Maybe he still is a great offensive mind. Maybe he still is a boy wonder, a really good protege of Bill Belichick, which, you know, the Bill Belichick coaching tree is produced some pretty good names as of late. I mean, number one, Brian Flores. I think anybody in the league would be happy to have a coach like Brian Flores, who went from tanking last year to in the playoffs this year with significantly less talent than a lot of teams have. I mean, he's a guy that gets that team to just flat out play every week. And I would love a guy like Brian Flores. They're also looking at Jared Mayo, who's the linebacker coach, a lot like Brian Flores was the linebacker coach in New England. They're looking at Jared Mayo as possibly a defensive coordinator, which I think would be a pretty good move. I mean, just think about that. If they did hire Josh McDaniels as the head coach, and then obviously head coach, offensive coordinator from New England, and then they hired Jared Mayo as the defensive coordinator from New England. I mean, you're trying to basically duplicate all the success that they've had without the guy that made it successful, which is Tom Brady and obviously Bill Belichick. But you know what? I mean, you know, Jeffrey Lurie is from that area. He is from the Boston area. There's a lot of sources that are suggesting that him and Josh McDaniels are closely tied, that they have a relationship. One thing in particular, Jeffrey Lurie actually might have let the cat out of the bag during the firing of Doug Peterson, when he essentially referred to Josh by first name only. He referred to him as Josh instead of Josh McDaniels when he was talking about Frank Reich, the whole Frank Reich situation. The quote exactly was, "We didn't know we were going to lose Frank Reich, but suddenly it happened when Josh turned that job down and set off a whole yada yada yada." So basically, he was already on his mind. That's kind of what that quote says to me, is that when, you know, it's just something you do when you're saying somebody's name a lot, you eventually just start, you know, just saying, calling them by first name. So it sounds like Josh McDaniels was kind of always one of the major names, even though the Eagles fans and the Eagles media, Philadelphia media, didn't necessarily know that. But without a doubt, that's definitely a name that, like I said, that might be, they're still interviewing guys, but Josh McDaniels does sound like he might have an inside track. And I'll work my way into thinking that that's a good idea. I'm always going to roll with it at the end of the day. I mean, I might not like it to begin with, but I mean, it's something that you really can't know until it all works out. You really can't know what's going to happen until these things play out. But I mean, Josh McDaniels, if they do hire him, I mean, he's a guy, he's going to bring a lot of energy. He's going to bring a lot of new offensive ideas. He's a younger guy. Maybe he'll relate to the players a little bit more. And I do like the fact that he will get in players' faces, because that was something I think Doug was seriously lacking. Doug didn't really seem to have that other gear. I mean, we saw it very, very sparingly, Doug's ability to turn that hard ass. They need a little bit of a hard ass here. They need somebody that's gonna, you know, not when he sees issues, basically put his foot down a little bit. And Doug was just a little bit too nice guy, which I think everybody loved Doug for that. But at some point, football players, or just men in general, are gonna walk all over that. And I think that's exactly what happened in Doug Peterson's tenure, and that's exactly what they did. They just kind of, you know, I mean, there's no other reason you can suggest that the Eagles, just after the 2017 season, they just started every season poorly. And they started a lot of games poorly. And it wasn't until they had their back against the wall where their pride came out and they just fought to actually win games and try to get into the playoffs and try to get back to that glory. But it's just strange that they were never really prepared, and they were never really motivated until the time was almost up. And it shouldn't take that. If you really want to win Super Bowls, the best way to do it is the way the teams that are still playing right now are doing it. And that's, you know, basically getting the first seed or the second seed, getting those bye weeks, getting those home field advantages, getting those things are what gets you to Super Bowls. And you don't get that way by getting into the, you know, not often anyway, by getting into the playoffs at the very last minute, coming from behind, you know, down several games and miraculously getting into the playoffs. That's not typically how people win Super Bowls, because you still got to go the long road. You still got to go on the road, three straight games to the best teams in the league. You get to the Super Bowl most times by winning throughout the season. and earning that easy path. And they just weren't doing that. So there's something to be said about that, that the Eagles just constantly were just lacking motivation and lacking, preparedness in the games that Doug was really suffering from. And I can't say I've ever really noticed that. When it comes to a Bill Belichick-led team, they were always prepared. They were always ready. There might have been a few games here and there at the beginning of seasons where they just weren't. But for the most part, that was a staple of the Patriots. And if the Eagles can duplicate that type of success, I mean, that'd be great. That's the idea, right? If you're hiring a guy like that, like a Josh McDaniels, it's 100% because you're trying to duplicate the success. But I don't know if Josh McDaniels is that guy, and I don't really think that he is. Nobody is. But if they can just get a modicum of that, just a small amount of that, I think that they'll be happy because the Eagles feel like their success over the last 20 years is an organizational success, not necessarily a coaching success, because they've been successful with four straight coaches, with Ray Rhodes was the first hire of Jeffrey Lurie. He was he constantly took them to the playoffs. Then they went to Andy Reid, who obviously had the most success or the longest tenure success, five championship games, a Super Bowl appearance. Then they obviously went to Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly got them to the playoffs once again. I mean, they were always in the running of playoffs or better, which is, I think, that basically is why the Eagles do it the way that they do it. That's why they haven't gotten rid of Howie Roseman. That's why they think that the coach isn't as important, and that's why they got rid of Doug instead of him. But the Eagles definitely have a lot of issues in front of them, a lot of issues they're facing. Part of the reason that I think people want Carson Wentz gone, and I include myself in that category, is not because of his talent. It's because of the price tag. I don't know if he's that much better than what they could find as a replacement. I'm still open to the idea of them possibly drafting a quarterback at number six or moving up. I'm not against that. If they were to trade Carson Wentz and get back any decent value, I mean, the biggest issue, it's fixing the salary cap, which they're, $60 million over or something like that, which is definitely a difficult fix. I don't know necessarily how they're going to do that. That would be something that I think would be the biggest issue facing the Eagles going forward. And getting rid of Carson Wentz, even though it doesn't allow for immediate relief, it does allow for relief after season, which, at that point they could try to build around whatever young quarterback they have, whether it's Jalen Hurts or whether they do decide to try to draft another young quarterback, because it's a pretty good draft as far as quarterbacks are concerned. They should be able to get somebody, in this draft. But like I said, that's not really my hope either. I mean, everybody would love Carson Wentz again if he played well again. That's at the end of the day, that's all it really takes for people to fall in love with Carson Wentz again. But after 5 years, I still have my doubts. There's still a lot of concern that Carson Wentz hasn't won a playoff game. He still hasn't shown that clutch factor, that killer instinct to bring the team back late in games. Although this last year he had a couple of close, he was close a couple of times against the Steelers and against the Ravens. He showed that ability to put a team on his back, but he just hasn't shown it enough. And he's almost in like the Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins category for me now, where you look at, do teams really want to commit to him? And the Eagles already made that commitment based largely off of a great 2017, which he hasn't been able to duplicate. And he doesn't look like the same guy physically, in my opinion. I was watching highlights of him just the other day from that 2017 season. He just doesn't look as fast. He doesn't look as agile. He doesn't look as mobile. And things like that, I mean, when you start to break down physically, it's just a matter of time before, and I'm not saying he is breaking down physically. I'm just saying that, especially with the amount of times he's getting hit, I'm just saying he doesn't appear to be that same guy that he was in 2017. He doesn't seem to have that same ability as he did in 2017. It's a lot like watching like Ben Roethlisberger this last year as he continued to fail the Steelers. If they had a better quarterback, they could possibly still be playing also. Injuries derailed their season as well. But ultimately, you can see when a guy just doesn't physically have it and he just can't make the same plays that he used to be able to make. So I guess I'll end this podcast by talking about this weekend's upcoming games, because I don't really, unless the Eagles hire a coach, which I think they will, I don't plan on doing another podcast this week. But if they do hire a coach and it's different than Josh McDaniels, I'll come on here and I'll give you guys another pod. But I think that, I think that this weekend's games, I really think it'll be Aaron Rodgers versus, Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. But, I mean, the league would love Tom Brady to get back in there. That'd be a huge story. I think they would also like the Bills. The Bills are They're everybody's darling now because the Bills have never, never won a Super Bowl. And I think a lot of people would be pulling for them. A lot of people would be pulling for Tom Brady to show Bill Belichick up too, for whatever reason. I don't necessarily understand, but, Tom Brady is definitely, he's like the LeBron James. He brings ratings, in the NFL. So if he got into the finals, he got into the Super Bowl, I think a lot of people would, it'd be a really good story. But I mean, I don't know, man. I think the Packers are it's a tough contest. It's a really good, it could go either way, but I'm going to go. I mean, honestly, I think I'll probably go with Tom Brady based off of the fact that Aaron Rodgers has shown the ability to really choke it up in the championship games, which I think is a part of his history at this point. But that could go either way. I mean, Aaron Rodgers played phenomenal this past week. If he can carry that in against the Buccaneers, whose defense played pretty good. I mean, this is a game, if it's going to be won by the Packers, it has to be won by Aaron Rodgers because the weakness of the Buccaneers team is their secondary. So that's something that they're definitely going to have to throw the ball. It's going to be on Rodgers to win that game. And I think that it's the opposite when you look at the Buccaneers, Tom Brady versus the Packers defense. The Packers secondary is outstanding. So that's going to be something where I think it's really going to be more on the running game of the Buccaneers to keep that game honest than anything. Because, I mean, as good as Tom Brady's playing, he doesn't have like the same type of dialed in connection with any of his receivers the same way that Aaron Rodgers does with Davante Adams. Like, can they stop that? Can the Buccaneers stop that? I don't think so. But can the Packers DBs stop the Buccaneers receivers? Yeah, I think they can because they have a terrific secondary. So that's going to be a definitely more interesting aspect of that. But like I said, at the end of the day, I will go with Tom Brady because Aaron Rodgers' history just appears to be – he just gets the championship games a lot and he just seems to not have good games. Last year, an example, he had a horrible game. The entire Packers team did. So I'll go with the Buccaneers to win that one. And then on the other side, I mean, I can't go against Mahomes. As much as I would like to see the Bills get to a Super Bowl, I do feel like the fun stops here. Their offense it didn't really look that great. I think the Chiefs are just, that's a Super Bowl everybody really wants, right? The GOAT in Tom Brady versus the possible future GOAT in Patrick Mahomes. A lot of people are already hyping him up like he might be the GOAT in waiting. That would be a huge Super Bowl. The old GOAT versus the young GOAT. And I think that that's pretty much what's going to happen because I do think that Patrick Mahomes is on another level. I think that even at Tom Brady's age, I mean, as good as Tom Brady was, I don't remember being this good at Patrick Mahomes' age. He wasn't. He wasn't as good as Patrick Mahomes is right now. And I think Patrick Mahomes could probably easily get his second Super Bowl win. But if he's going to do that, he's got to go. I think he's going to have to go through Tom Brady, which would be a huge story. So I'm going to go ahead and end the podcast there. Appreciate you guys for listening. If you want to give me a follow, I'd appreciate that as well. And other than that, this has been Philadelphia Eagles Talk, and I'm your host, Kevin Woodman. Thanks for listening.